It's okay to say, I don't know. It's okay to say, I'm doing my best. It's okay to say, you know, I am not perfect. I am not right. I do not do everything correctly. And then all of a sudden, what does that do? It creates kids who don't stop doing the things we teach them to do. Play, be creative, imagine, be nice, share, listen, rest, take naps, express, shout, deal with your temper tantrum, go into your room, deal with what you need to deal with, and go back into the world, right? The things we teach kids, I think, how do we keep them doing those things in adulthood? We tell parents to get back to that tipping point.
Welcome to What's the Lesson, the podcast that takes you on a deep dive into the world of character development.
We're Jill and Mary, the dynamic duo behind Girls Mentorship.
We foster self-confidence, self-esteem, and self-awareness for tween and teen girls, along with their invaluable network of supporters through events, resources, and mentorship.
Picture us as your coaches, walking alongside you through the world of social-emotional learning, and think of this podcast as your own personal roadmap.
We'll support you in discovering obstacles that might be holding you back and gain clarity on why this work is a game changer, not only for your growth, but for the next generation of leaders as well.
Alongside our fantastic guests, we're here to share knowledge about how you can change old patterns of behavior and make sense of those WTF moments, shifting them into lessons that can drastically improve your life instead.
Whether you're an entrepreneur, a superhero stay-at-home mom, or someone fueled by boundless curiosity, our mission is crystal clear: to supercharge your emotional intelligence and sprinkle the magic of SEL into every corner of your life.
You know, what I have loved about Hanson is we've seen them kind of make a resurgence. Like, they've gotten the band back together, which I'm assuming isn't that hard.
Yes, they have.
They're related. Brothers. Closely related. So every family gathering probably has some sort of a, you know, rendition of Mbop, right?
100%. And that's what I love most about JC. Everything is a
song and dance.
It's a squee-dee-dee-dee-bop. And I have now taken
that.
When I am like thinking, I have to think in beep 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 because of you, and I owe you to
this. It is the best way to end. It's like, so often, and this goes into the whole world of enoughness, we think we need to have it all figured out. But so often, the end of a statement is, and da 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 da. Because we don't know it, but we know it's there. So,
thanks.
Bravo! You've mastered.
You know what?
It.
You've really given me the permission, and I love a good song and dance. So ever since I've met you, I'm like, I'm adopting that. I'm gonna take a little JC into my JP and sprinkle the song and ditty dance to people when I'm thinking out loud.
It has been a hilarious adoption.
Yeah.
Let's take it back, because we actually haven't known you that long, but you're one of those people who, not knowing you that long, feels like we've also known you a lifetime. It's like a puzzle piece that we didn't know was missing. You've literally fit right into our life, right into the grand scheme of things. And we haven't even really needed to talk surface level things with you. Mm-hmm. We've just gone straight deep into life and what you just mentioned, enoughness, and the concepts behind showing up in all of your human and how that can impact positively other people.
Straight up. Yeah, it's always my favorite movie is You've Got Mail, for a lot of reasons, but mainly five. Tom Hanks, Meg Ryan, Golden Retrievers, bookstores in New York in the fall. But there are so many great moments in this movie that speak to the power of simple human connection. And one of them you just raised up. Meg Ryan says, when she's typing into her instant messenger, she says, I like starting our emails, our messages, as if we are in the middle of a conversation. Because so often, these little moments that we have with people have so much more meaning than the big moments that we plan out. So again, even the fact that, you know, this podcast conversation started by us seeing each other's faces and we start talking There's no pomp or circumstance. There's no here's the beginning. But I think there's a lot of really powerful relationships that start by people courageously assuming that there is something to benefit from by knowing one another. And you two are some of those people for me.
Well, we are just so blessed to call you a friend, but really, I feel like we need to paint the picture of how we know one another and why we're so excited to have you on the podcast today. So can we walk down memory lane? And as much as our listeners know a lot about the red thread that Mary and I share, which is Lululemon, which that is still the case with you.
It is.
Unbeknownst to us, the other red thread is Cadre. So let's invite the viewers into our living rooms right now. Of the time that you got introduced to Cadre and how we got connected.
Absolutely. So Cadre, the wonderful movement to create accessibility to mental health and wellness for every single person through the power of their devices, through connection and community with professionals and peers. You know, Mary and Jill, you've been a part of this Cadre journey a lot longer than I have. But founder of Cadre, Luke Wentlandt, saw me on television about middle of last summer 2023. So I do wellness correspondence for the ABC Syndicate in Minneapolis and St. Paul. And Luke saw me on television and reached out to me on LinkedIn saying, you, I need to meet you. And we sat down for coffee, and 3 minutes later, we were, you know, I was woven into the Cadre sphere as a person to help bring mental health and wellness off the high shelf for individuals, whether they're young or old, whether they think their life is okay or not okay, whether they feel they are doing things correctly or incorrectly, broken, blessed, all the things, right? And through that, I quickly became the new person to help put language around what Cadre is. And then we got to meet in person in Minneapolis in November, as we shared stage at an event talking about wellness with people. Yeah, it was a lovely, lovely day of us getting to share our stuff.
Yeah, getting to meet you was so great because we felt, like I said, like we already knew you. So the in-person, belly-to-belly, literal and figurative, like meeting of you was so grand, but so normal because we felt like we already knew who you were. So like the embrace was just a beautiful thing waiting to happen. And let's refresh people's memory for Cadre. We, Jill and I, are very hellbent, obviously, with girls mentorship on creating spaces for girls where they feel like they can be seen, heard, and valued. So our relationship with this company called Cadre was such a natural fit as well because it is a mental health and wellness app. It's got creators from every single walk of life sharing their lived experience in hopes to reach one person that is really, I think, the essentialism of it in terms of how closely we want to just be integrated into communities. So we want to meet people exactly where they are with their mental health journey and have content that they can easily relate to so they understand that they're not alone. And if you bring that back to what our mission vision is here at Girls Mentorship, we just want girls to understand that somebody has walked the path that they're walking and that they don't have to do it alone. Mm-hmm. So when we were invited into what you just referenced, JC, as the Cadre sphere, it was a literal no-brainer for us to link arms. And to see how this company has grown right alongside Cadre, it's been so cool with the crossover and seeing the things that y'all are implementing to grow the company in order to help communities with the things that we're doing to help grow the communities that we're a part of. So just wanted to give our listeners a little bit of a refresher as to what Cadre actually was, because I know some of y'all have heard us say this episode is sponsored by the one and only Cadre.
That's right. And JC, what I want to also say in welcoming and kind of giving a little bit of backstory of what Cadre is to our listeners, what I love most about you is your story and how it fits within the Cadre sphere. And really outside of Cadre, the work that you've done around diversity and inclusion and enoughness and going into other organizations, businesses, to talk about how to expand and see people for truly who they are without labeling them or putting them inside of a box. We'll unpack that in just a second. But for me, when I first met you, your story is so compelling around how you grew up and how you got to where you are today. And I feel like it's really important for our listeners to hear a snippet of that story so that that can allow us to jump off and really get into this conversation.
Absolutely. As we think about how indelible our childhood is on who we become, I was the, you know, hyper emotional, nonverbal, desiring to be a part of what seemingly was important to be a part of, right? I was I never had to come out of the gay closet because I always was very comfortable with who I was. But with that being said, I never carried myself differently than who I was within the moment. So again, imagine being that kid who was going to wear exercise pants every day because it made me feel comfortable, and I couldn't fake wearing jeans. I couldn't fake being in the in crowd because I needed to be myself, right? Parents and supporters of young people out there, you know exactly who I'm talking about. And I think to a certain extent, we all relate to that. You know, this will kind of, I'll share the story of, you know, when I was standing on the 3-meter diving board, you know, deathly afraid to jump into the deep end of the pool. And all of the kids who are already treading down in the deep end of the pool are saying, just jump, just jump, just jump. And I'm on that diving board thinking about the power of the word just. Now, at the time, it wasn't as clear in my mind as it is today, but the word just to me in that moment was saying, this should be easy for you because it is easy for us. But in that moment, the word just was my kryptonite. Because if I didn't jump off that diving board, I really was the sissy, weird, hyper-emotional kid who just wanted to sit and play my piano because I didn't know how to human with other human beings. That word just stuck with me so much that it's become a lot of the work that I do. But, you know, I sooner or later found the tennis court, and I found a place where I could be very much myself around other young people very much being themselves. Tennis is often a sport where a lot of the unique, individualistic individuals end up, and I ended up becoming a high school tennis coach. I wasn't a very good tennis player, but I was very good at going, there's a power here in allowing people, Jill, to your point, allowing people to be exactly who they are, not to pander to them, not to say you don't have to grow or you're not going to grow, but to say right now you have some great unique capacity that's woven in your uniqueness. How do we, rather than attempting to say, here's the 5 easy steps to making everyone the same and everything okay, but to say, you are not going to have a path that resembles anyone else's. So let's, next to other people figuring out their path, figure out our own path. And all of a sudden, that's become the starting place of everything that I do. How do we allow people to understand their uniqueness? This is Sports Psychology 101. Right? The greatest athletes, the greatest achievers in the world, they are not the strongest, fastest, hardest, deepest individuals. They're the ones who figure out how to get to ready position first. In other words, they go, in this moment, with what I have and what's going on around me, how do I proceed? That goes for every single person, whether they are on the on the football field, in the classroom, sitting at their instrument, leading the C-suite, boardroom meeting, whether they're running the country, whether they are sitting on the street corner with a sign saying, please help. In that moment, everybody has a capacity to do something. And this world is very, very good at convincing them that they don't have something to do, that they don't have a strength, that they don't have a power, that they are not currently enough, that they need to change before they can start being good. And my work is in unraveling that mentality.
It's been awesome to be invited into your thought process with the word just and enoughness. It's opened up a whole new world for Jill and I, and I think it's an appropriate time to introduce the fact that because of that, this is where our Lululemon wires cross, because you have worked with, I think as an ambassador, you can correct me if I'm wrong, with the Lululemon in the Minneapolis area, which Minneapolis has been a hotspot for so many incredible things, debates, new laws. Obviously, we can't forget that Minneapolis was the height of 2020 and what happened with George Floyd that, I mean, so many new discussions came out of that that I know you were in the forefront of and involved heavily in. With your not enoughness, with your word of thinking just is just so easy for other people, you've been able to really come into a lot of corporations with this ideology and change the way other people think and change the way people do business. And Jill and I are so enamored with that because oftentimes people think, well, I'm just one person. What impact am I going to make? And looking at you and hearing your story, it's so incredibly clear that just one person, quote unquote, can actually make big waves. Whether you dove off that diving board or not, you can actually do so many incredible things within your community. The change that you've made, the discussions that you bring to the table, you work with C-suite executives all the way down to high school teams. Everybody in between needs these conversations and this type of work. And it's been really cool to be brought into these conversations directly with you because we've gotten to be in your presence obviously a ton of times over Zoom, but twice in person with some really in-depth and cool conversations. The first time was a workshop retreat that we had where you said we both spoke at, and you did this 30-minute presentation where at the end you said, I'm glad you guys liked that because I really just wanted to see how little I could speak. And you made a huge impact with not a ton of words. It was a movement exercise. And the movement that we all felt, I mean, figuratively was incredible afterwards, which made me feel like we overcomplicate things as a society so much. And to peel back the layers of making it easeful and simplistic, there's so much beauty in that that we totally miss because we love to overcomplicate things. We love to do too much. We love to, you know, try to bring this person in, that person in and complicate it. The second time we got to be with you was a full 2 days worth of a workshop in terms of thinking of how we wanted to move the needle forward with Cadre. And I think that's where Jill and I really walked away, I don't want to say pinching ourselves, but being really grateful for the opportunity of opening ourselves up to something completely new to us. I mean, we giggled all the way home thinking, how did we end up in a room like this? Like, it's so funny that when you say yes to certain opportunities, you have no idea what can come forward for you. And the relationship we've been able to cultivate with the leadership at Cadre, including you, has been one of those things that we've just been so grateful for. So thank you for sharing a little bit more about how you got to who you are today.
Yeah, I'll throw three, and let's see if I remember all of them. But you just spoke to the core of what I think stops people, and it wraps back into this enoughness world. You know, like you look at Jill and Mary and you go, we're going to be two people who are going to do something in this world that we think in our heart of hearts has great potential indelible impact on everybody. For a statement like that, we people go, okay, show us the 7-step plan. And we go, and we feel like we need to have that. We feel like we need to know all of the things. So what do? We overcomplicate. We attempt to say, we're going to make sure that we answer every question before it's asked. And I think in the work that you are doing, again, let's look historically over the last 50 years at the work that's been done on improving the lives of young people. You know, there's a lot of studies on you know, girls and STEM, girls and math, where, you know, there was a very large separation between young girls feeling that math was something that they could be good at. And studies came to show that if girls believe that if by a certain age that math is not something they can do, that they can excel at, that they're never going to change that mindset. So a lot of young education shifted into going, hey, how do we support young female identifying human beings and their curiosity and their enjoyment and their capacity to do math and to be able to speak positively about their interest and their capacity and their worries and their hopes and concerns and da da da. And what happened? All of a sudden, we see that the incapacity went away. Let's look at every human being and running. Let's look at how many people have this story of the track and field day or the running the mile day. 99% of human beings on this planet say, I am not a runner. There's no other verb that they do that with. No one will say, I am not an eater. I'm not a sitter. I'm not a shoe wearer. Even if they don't eat or sit or wear shoes, they would never go, oh, I don't wear shoes. But we go, oh, I'm not a runner. Because runners are genetically designed, skinny, fast people who fit the archetype of what a runner is. Because it goes back to that early stage of faking injuries on track and field day, being the last person to finish, being the last person chosen on the sports team. All of these things are indelible because we think that we are not enough to do the thing. We are not enough to have the big idea. We are not enough to stand in front of the room and talk to other people. We are not enough to start the business. We are not enough to be the person who is giving the TED Talk or having the podcast or whatever. So even to that point, I think the work that you two are doing, and again, there is some wonderful, you know, synergy within even the Lululemon philosophy. Right? Lululemon as a juggernaut entity on this planet now, their heart is in the sweat life, right? In this idea that within our connecting and our growing and our moving, that there is a fullness of life. I was now again, I am not a alpha athlete. I'm not a innate person who goes, let's move, let's grind, let's crush. I'm actually the antithesis to that. And the cool thing is, I was sent out on the world of Core Power Yoga to kind of expand their brand around the United States. So I got moved to Boston, and for a year I was the Johnny Appleseed of this cultural movement brand. And for a year I was the person in Boston who was living this brand, and I of course connected with Lululemon in Boston. And right before I left, like, oh, we're about to name you as an ambassador. Bye. And I go, darn it. So then all of a sudden I am in Dallas, and I was there for about 11 months. And all of a sudden Dallas Lou is like, oh, we're just about to name you an ambassador. Bye. I go, yeah. And then it kept happening and kept happening because I kept going from market to market. And what I said to Lululemon as a corporation, I go, Lululemon, you are this brand of the sweat life where you have people who are living transient lives, who are moving, you know, who are hopping in a plane and working all over the place. Like, who are your, for listeners, Lululemon has a model of ambassadorship where rather than like a Nike, where there's a Michael Jordan or a Serena Williams, like the biggest of the big, Lululemon started saying, hey, let's have people within communities, people who are within relationships with our customers, let's have them be the people that we hang on the walls in our stores. And Lululemon has really banked on these types of relationships. As Lululemon's gotten bigger and bigger, it's been harder for them to stay within that flow, right? They kind of want to go to being the bigger, the bolder, the stronger, harder, faster, deeper, because that's what culture kind of leads us to do. What I was saying to Lululemon was, I'm like, hey, let me be an ambassador for the people who do not stay still. And like, ah, that's not our model. And I'm like, okay, well, I plopped it out there. Well, sooner or later, I settled back down in the Twin Cities and like, hey, be an ambassador. Ambassadorship is supposed to be 2 years at the time. 6 years later, I was still an ambassador because they didn't know how to end what I saw as a partnership. Because I'm like, I'm going to continue to create alongside you. And I'm going to assume that you're going to create alongside me, even though I'm not the superstar athlete, even though I'm not the XYZ. And all of a sudden Lululemon was, I mean, I was doing stuff around the world with Lululemon because my brand was, how about rather than marketing to the 6% of people who we think are cool enough to associate with our brand, how about we help everybody see that they are cool enough to be a part of our brand, so then we can go ahead and actually impact everybody from a business sense. We can make money from everybody, but more so, the importance and the sustainability of our work can impact everybody. I often talk about what we're doing at Cadre and what you're doing, Girls Mentorship, and what the sustainable brands of health and wellness are. And there's not a lot of them, but it's like bottled water. Right? This is normally the time when I would, if my bottle was close by, I'd pick it up and be like, this, 50 years ago, people didn't have a reusable bottle of water, as now all of a sudden, and normally exactly what happens, even though I don't, everybody else does right now. 50 years ago, we didn't have
bottles
of water. Exactly. It is weird if we don't. Every single brand, their corporate giveaway, their tchotchke, is now a water bottle that's branded. Every single person, whether you are poor or rich, whether you are accepted in society or not, whether you are healthy or unhealthy, no matter what, everybody carries a bottle of water. Why? What changed in society that made us do that? It wasn't that we made water sexy. It wasn't that we made people feel bad that they weren't having the cool water bottle. Some brands did that, but what we ended up doing is we said, hey, having water in your life, it's not going to give you wings. It's not going to make you rich. It's not going to fix all of your problems, but it's definitely going to help. So everyone started going, oh, you're not trying to make me feel bad. You're not telling me that I'm broken. You're saying, hey, drink water. It's going to help you out. And everyone started going, sweet. I don't feel foolish in doing this thing in the way that I do this thing. Guess what? What are we doing with our young people? We are creating more access to being enough. We are creating more access to being unique and to being passionate in different ways. We are giving more pathways to failing and falling and struggling and having dark times and bright times, not because we want to pander to people, but because that's what life looks like. So, you know, we talk about the through line of the Lululemon. We talk about the through line of Cadre. We talk about how people end up meeting one another. We talk about how we stand in front of groups of people and go, huh, what is actually the opportunity here? Like my world, and it's really hard to talk about where I am and what I get to do because I'm pretty lucky that I get asked to just kind of be a, you know, for those Full House fans out there, I often feel like Joey in the basement. Like I'm in a lot of people's basements. It's like, oh, we're doing this thing and here's all the main characters. And JC comes up from the basement to say, cut it out, and like picks up a woodchuck puppet and makes people laugh for a couple of minutes. And then you go, wow, I'm really glad that we have a Joey in the basement. What we're creating, I feel, is this opportunity to work less hard at making ourselves into being something out of the ordinary, but saying, here's what ordinary looks like. Here's what is relatable. Here is what is soluble to your soul. Here are action steps that you can take with one another. Because, I mean, Mary, you mentioned like when I led that half an hour conversation and I didn't speak very much, it was because I knew in that moment, people's pathway to being closer to their own wellness and healthiness wasn't from an external source, but it was them galvanizing something within themselves to go, oh, right now I'm realizing something in myself. I'm sharing a thought that I think is going to have value to somebody else. And all of a sudden, we realize that our purpose is that. We say it again and again. Like, oh, the people, like my work is easy. even though it's hard, but it's easy because I see people who see themselves and start carrying themselves differently. Me being a high school tennis coach, me being a high school theater director, me now working as a theater educator, regularly, I will always be rooted in working with young people because they get it. Like they're closer to going, oh, you know what? I actually still dream and think my dreams are possible. I still get excited about things and think my excitement is worthy of being shared. The older we get, life, the less good we get.
Life
at doing
hasn't
those
gotten
things.
Them down yet. Yeah. Life hasn't
exactly.
told
yeah,
them.
Yeah, life hasn't happened.
We hate SMART goals. I know it works for some people, but the acronym of SMART goals, right? I know you have to be specific. I know all that, but the R in that, it's got to be realistic. I hate that so much because at a certain point in time, we're telling our daughters that they can be ballerinas or firefighters or marine biologists. That's a big one. I think that has to do with Lisa Frank. But we're telling them to dream so big and be whatever they want to be, right? And then at a certain point when we have a mortgage or, you know, a car payment, we have to be realistic. Go get a career that will, you know, suffice and pay your bills and don't think too far outside the box. So I mm-hmm. love that you called that out because that is one of the biggest reasons we love working with teenagers. They A, see no bullshit, B, take no bullshit. They see directly through you and they know if you're there to try to get something out of them or you're there for them. And I love their yeah. pureness because they don't have much of a filter. They don't have rose colored glasses yet. So if you're pure in your intentions, they can sense that. They're like a horse or a bee. I think those two things also understand if you're fearful or yeah. whatever it is, like yep. they pick up on your body language so easily. And it's not as hard as people make it out to be to create a bridge between who they are and who mm-hmm. you are and what your intentions are for them.
And JC, I can listen to you speak all day long about this. And what I love most about linking arms with you is continuing to learn from you. Like it allows me to check myself around how I'm showing up, not only in my business, but for my family, for my kids. And as much as when you're in this work, you like to link arms with other like-minded individuals, and we start to, we want to make change happen. That's why you're in the work that you do. That's why we're in the work that we do. And collectively as cadre, we're excited to make change for people, to meet them really where they are and let them know that they are enough in their journey and that wherever they want to take their journey, we got them. But what Mary and I do see, and I don't want to be, you know, the naysayer on this side of the screen, but I know parents are the ones who are kind of listening to society and getting caught in the bullshit. And unfortunately, that's then impacting their children. For example, I'm already having conversations with my kiddos about this upcoming election, even though it's not going to happen for several months.
And her kids are 10 and 8.
They're 10 and 8. And I already know that they have a bias and an opinion about who's running. So it's been really interesting to have conversations at home around allowing people to have their opinions and what they believe in, and how do you have a respectful debate, and how do you stay true to yourself without feeling like you have to sway to fit in? So that's just a small example, but I see it a lot in sports as well, that parents are just yearning for their kid to be the next Brock Purdy and the next Patrick Mahomes, and they're doing everything in their power to literally bulldoze other children and families to get their kiddo to be the best and et cetera. So I'm really curious around what would you say to parents in regards to like not falling into what society's pressures are when big things happen. It's like, how do you always come back to your family values and teach your kids to have that moral compass? Curious from what you have to say.
Yeah, absolutely. So I will start by saying that there is very few things that are consistent in this world from the time that creation began until now and into the future. But those things are very consistent and very powerful. One is that change is. That's a full sentence. Change is, period. Beth Comstock, who helped kind of save NBC around the time of the Twin Towers attacks, worked for General Electric, brought General Electric into the in the new world. So a giant marketing voice. Beth Comstock said in 2018, change is happening slower now than it is ever going to happen again. Meaning, this moment that we are in is the most peaceful moment we are ever going to exist in on this planet.
It's not meant to be scary to say change is not ever going to slow down. What it means is that we have always been existing in a world with our bodies, with our personalities, that allows us to navigate, allows us to shift, allows us to deal with all the things that are going on. Let's think about the pandemic. All of a sudden, we started talking about, you know, a year and a half in, it's like, when are we going to go back to normal? But I'm 41. I think about my history books when I was a kid. There was things called like the Hundred Years' War. Like the Spanish flu lasted from some year to like 15 years later. A lot of the work that we are doing today, we aren't going to be alive to see the fruit of our labors. And I think that's really hard for us to go, just wait. Because 2 years from now or 6 months from now or next season, things are going to, like, you're going to see that things get better. I mean, I was a youth director for 12 years. I'm a theater educator and I've been a legal guardian for a short amount of time twice to young people. I don't feel the call to have my own offspring because I very much feel called to be a Joey in the basement type of personality for other people's people. So I don't say this lightly because I know how hard it is to look at your children and go, I just want them to have the best things. I just want them to be safe. I just want them to da 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 da. Notice I'm using the word just, and I'm using it the way that you use the word just, parents, as if this thing should be easy. But no, guess what? Want your kid to have the dream of being a sports star when they were five in 2024, that means they have to be a traveling athlete at the age of six. Where 20 years ago, the paradigm was different. If we want to go ahead and say, kids are on social media too much nowadays. And I go, well, parents, you have an option. Either allow your kids to do less so they can have real-time relationships with their friends where they can actually go out in the streets and play with them, or educate them that social media may be the 2024 hack to have real personal friendships by being able to say, hi, friend, in a text message at the end of the day. I know I didn't get to see you today because I had to go from church school to SAT prep to traveling practice to dance team to robot club to da ba da ba da because I am a good kid and good kids do lots of stuff. And all of a sudden, parents, you have that really hard choice of going, gosh, there aren't any really clear answers in this very hard thing known as being a person on this planet. So what is our sustainable pathway? It is realizing that we have to do the slow grunt work and the things that seem relatively simple actually have a lot of power. I'll use this as an example. Like Mary and Jill and JC, we are three people who share ideas in this world. And I'm going to weave this back into Cadre for a moment. At the end of the first time that we met, we spoke on the same day at this wellness summit. And at the end of the day, we all sat in chairs in the front of the room of people attending for a question and answer period. I asked a question to the people in the room. I was like, hey, how many of you agreed with everything that all of these experts said today? And like 2.5 people raised their hands. And I was like, are you serious? I've agreed with like half of what these people said today. And of course, Luke, the founder of Cadre, sitting next to me and kind of has that slight positive smile, half grimace on his face. He's like, oh, JC says stuff like this all the time. Exhale. But I made the point in that moment that right now we think we're supposed to agree with everything that the quote-unquote experts say, as if we are not the experts in our own life, with our intuition, with our curiosity, with our lived experience, with the things we care about, with the things we're scared of. Like, no, like the path to being well and happy and grounded and whole isn't going, you know what, here's what makes sense to me. Here's a great example. JC thinks that the idea of being 1% better every single day doesn't make a lot of sense. Mary and Jill do. And the cool thing is we're all right. Because what I'm saying is the idea of consistent daily progression makes someone like me, that scared kid standing on the diving board who isn't enough, be like, so wait, all those days that I'm actually not better than I was yesterday? Like I crawl into a hole and I die. Do I understand the idea of consistent progression? Do I understand that seeing scalable growth allows people to go, today I need to do something? Yeah. Who's right? We all are. Why? Not because of what we're saying, but because of the investment that we are placing into the relationships of who we're saying it to. Because at the end of the day, we are not going to be the savior for anybody. You will, and again, I'm saying this from an invested place, parent, you know that you have a certain amount of control over your children. And newsflash, you don't have 100% control over your children. It doesn't work that way. So how do you influence? How do you establish sustainable ideas of growth? How do you become that voice that's in their head when you're not there? And what does that voice say? It doesn't guarantee 100% success, but it does show you that what you're doing is enough. So that's my two cents. And I hope it's semi-nourishing, but also makes you go, oh.
I know. Well, and what happens if you are the parent who is like, okay, I totally get this. And what happens if you're the parent who's like, this shit's bullshit. I don't actually care. Would you still say that, you know, like that you're not wrong for feeling that way?
So my undergrad work, I have a sociologically lensed theology degree. In other words, I studied the reality that people believe stuff, whether that is God or family or Britney Spears or the Kansas City Chiefs or food or nature or puppies or whatever. Right? Everybody innately believes in something. So one of the big things I take from that is all of our communication is in a cultural linguistic lens, meaning everybody communicates in a certain way at a certain time to deliver a certain message to a certain group of people. And all of that is contextual. So how often do we say parents, it's like, we don't know people's stories. We don't know what people are carrying. We don't. And that allows us to take the people who we want to bang our heads against the wall over and allows us to go, you know what, right now, it's not worth it. And it also does help us remember that we don't know everything about everybody. At the end of the day, I have never met the person who is not greatly impacted by the world in which they've lived in. Does that give a get out of jail free card to everybody? No. Does it in a universal sense? Kind of yes. There are people who do everything right and get nothing good, and people who do nothing right and get everything. Like if we go, how is this fair? It's like, say that to the family of ducks who's running across the road trying to deal with humans' automobiles. How is that fair? And we know it's not. It's just, it's harder for us to see what the universe's automobiles are when we are the family of ducks on the street. So at the end of the day, how do we, and I know like so much of the great work that you do, is how do we be positive influences on people outside of our sphere? Like how do we help other kids? How do we help other parents? How do we help the world? When I was 8 to 10 years old, I loved politics. I thought it was the funnest game. It made me like, America. And now I'm just like, holy God. But again, what has changed? The main thing is our access to information. Meaning, if what we are looking for in this world is the person who has no fault and no blemish, to lead or whatever, I'm sorry, like those people don't exist. Anytime we raise people above humanity, that's when we get really weird, icky, perverse examples of humanity. And that goes in every realm. Everybody falls from the image that we raise them to if it is above human.
I think we're seeing so much of that right now. I like what you just said, we're seeing with the point you raised in terms of access to information and how we're putting so many people on a pedestal. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love TikTok. I spend probably too much time on it, but it also helps me plug into what people's realities are. So there are people tracking a Taylor Swift jet, right? They know every move that woman makes in the public. They don't necessarily know everything that they think they know about her behind closed doors. But we've put people on this pedestal in terms of how we think they're going to save humanity in some way, shape, or form. And the question that you posed is, how do we? I think we've all become such incredible examples, even in the 1% conversation of how do you invite people in to what other options there could be or what other perspectives there could be without forcing them to come in, right? It's the simple knock on the door, like, hey, I'm here with this perspective. If at ever you want to have a conversation with me about this thing, not forcing you, not going to be mad, not going to make you right or wrong for not accepting the invitation, but hey, we're going to be over here. So what I think Cadre has done, what we have done, and what you have done in your individual career so beautifully is just invite without expectation to this new conversation that we're having over here. And whether you come or not, we're still going to be having it. And we're going to be super excited for you if you decide to walk into this conversation. And it doesn't mean that you have to agree with what we say at the end of the conversation, but just knowing that there is space created for people with an alternate perspective than ours, because even thinking of how saying something like we want you to get 1% better could put somebody off is a big thing for us, because we want our languaging to be accepting of the little girl who might be having the same thoughts that you had when you were that little boy on that diving board.
Yep.
So I think it's very, very simplistic. But again, knowing that simple doesn't mean easy. And as humans bringing this conversation full circle, we love to complicate things. We don't love to make things easeful, to take the easy road. It seems like we love to grind it out, to prove to other people how much blood, sweat, and tears that we put into everything. And I am definitely guilty of that. It's only within the last couple of years that I've started to ask myself the question of, can this be easy? Can it be? And I think that's a really cool question to ponder, because it allows our perspective to shift and change and to find people in our life who also have that same thought process. And when we can link arms, it goes back to the old saying of, if you want to go fast, go alone.
Go fast,
but if you want to go far, go together. And so I think that's such a beautiful call out in terms of how we make things more easeful for people to get on the same page. It's to dial it back. It's to hold space. It's to create space and then have that invitation without expectation.
And just to remind yourself that when you as a parent or you as an individual makes yourself better than other people, that's when things get messy. And same with our kids. A lot of the work that Mary and I do is telling parents, like, yes, your kid is amazing and special and spectacular, but they are no different than the person that they're sitting next to. And oftentimes we tell our kids that, like, oh my God, you're just so amazing and you're so important. And that can get really messy, because then they have this complex of, well, I'm better. I'm going to now be self-absorbed in my own being, that I'm going to kind of now not pay attention to anybody else, because really it's all about me.
It's the concept that your kids are your world and your world revolves around them, but the world does not revolve around yes. them. Yeah.
Well, and you guys just laid out the spectrum so perfectly, right? It's like some things are really easy and some things are really complex. And it's making sure that in the midst of our reality, we let the easy things be easy and we shout loudly that the complex things are complex. Because through my reality, like the be 1% better, for me, what I say is like, rather than being 1% better every day, be as good as you are each day, and that'll get you hella far. Now, again, that makes sense within a conversation where people know me. But I'll tell you, for the last year and a half, I've been working on the first comprehensive research ever done on food, body, and fitness shaming in North America. First of all, the fact that research hasn't been done before, you go, how is that possible? Well, who would pay for it? It would be the food and the fitness industries, because they're the ones who use shame as a mechanism to sell their product. Why? Because they need to be successful. Why? Because that's what their parents taught them when they were a kid. No matter what you do, you need to be successful. And successful is being stronger, harder, faster, deeper. All this is tied. But we created this cycle of shame that shows how people move with shame or guilt or da-da-da-da-da. And this cycle starts with, I hear simple messages. Therefore, I think my pathway to being better should be simple. And this pathway very much quickly moves them through. I did the simple thing and nothing changed. I must have done something wrong. And then you move into isolation, you move into guilt, you move into shame, and then you move into desperation. And you go, I am so shameful to me and to this world that I desperately need to find a simple message to fix me now. And here's the deal. We're not going to stop this cycle. What we can do is we can call it out. And when we do, when we shine light on the dark boogeyman in the corner, it becomes a coat rack again. Like right now, there's a lot of kids who really think there's a boogeyman in the corner, but those kids are smart enough to ask for a nightlight. Most parents, they won't ask for the nightlight. They will simply cower at the idea that there's a boogeyman, and they will live impacting everybody else with the reality of the boogeyman in that corner. So how wonderful that you two are creating space for parents to say, it's okay to pick up the flashlight. It's okay to say, I don't know. It's okay to say, I'm doing my best. It's okay to say, you know, I am not perfect. I am not right. I do not do everything correctly. And then all of a sudden, what does that do? It creates kids who don't stop doing the things we teach them to do. Play, be creative, imagine, be nice, share, listen, rest, take naps, express, shout, deal with your temper tantrum, go into your room, deal with what you need to deal with, and go back into the world. Right? The things we teach kids, I think, how do we keep them doing those things in adulthood? We tell parents to get back to that type of mentality.
Amen. Mic drop. That's it.
That was all.
That's all we needed to
talk
about.
That's our episode for today, folks.
Okay. I think that's the Looney Tunes sign off. That's all, yeah, folks.
That's all, folks.
That was
and
great.
Also with you.
We'll link your God, we just love you so much. If people want to find you, would your Instagram have all of the information that they need to be able to locate and or reach out to you if need be?
Yes, and please do. I love when people send me messages and act like we're Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks. Like, message me as if we already know each other. And I literally thrive on getting to know people. So please, if there's any questions, any resources I could provide, any ears I can lend to listen, Instagram, Facebook, feel free to reach out.
All right, you're fam. This was the best. We appreciate you so much. Audience, we're kicking you out. JC, don't go anywhere. Until the next time, we'll see you on the next episode of What's the Lesson?
Bye, everyone.
Thanks so much for tuning in to What's the Lesson.
If you're feeling the same I can do anything attitude that we are, here's how you can keep the momentum going.
Spread the good vibes. Share this episode with your friends, family, or give us a shout out on your social media.
Fancy a trip to iTunes Town? We're all ears for your ratings and reviews. Seriously, we read each one of them. Your thoughts are like gold to us.
Lastly, let's be friends. Hang out with us on social media for more awesome content and behind the scenes action.
And until we meet again, remember our golden rule. Turning those WTF moments into WTL moments is a superpower.
Practice is always progress.
And you've got this.